Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor. This is a rebroadcast of episode number 861, 7 Journaling Techniques That Can Change Your Life. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back on Wednesday with a brand new episode.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. In my 20s and early 30s, I was a regular journaler. Several years ago, however, I stopped journaling almost entirely because I wasn't getting anything out of it anymore. But my guest has helped me see that my problem wasn't with journaling itself, but that I had got into a journaling rut, and he's introduced me to some new ways to journal that have inspired me to get back into the practice. Campbell Walker is an illustrator, animator, podcaster, and YouTuber, as well as the author of Your Head is a Houseboat, A Chaotic Guide to Mental Clarity. Today on the show, Cam shares how journaling transformed his life and what it can do for yours. We discuss why it's helpful to do a journaling brain dump and how to then move beyond that to incorporate different techniques that will help you get greater insight into the problems you're facing and how to solve them. We unpack those techniques, which include how to journal to break mindset, conduct a lifestyle and habits audit, and quell anxiety. We also talk about an experiment Cam did where he only used the social media apps on his phone when he was posting something. And every time he got the itch to check social media for fun, he engaged in something he calls microjournaling instead. We end our conversation with how Cam's journaling changed after he became a dad and his tips on making journaling a consistent habit in your life. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/journaling. All right, Cam Walker, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
So you are a YouTuber, an author, and do a lot of like self-development type things. And a lot of it is about journaling. You're a big fan of journaling. You've called it your number one problem-solving tool. I'm curious, what was going on in your life when you discovered the power of journaling?
Oh, that's a brilliant question. So number one solving tool in terms of problems, only because it lets you know what problems are next to solve. But in terms of my life, I guess it was pretty contrasted with the sort of situation that I found myself in. Long story short, found myself in the grips of a pretty gnarly drug addiction, which I was funding by funding other people's drug addictions. And every time that I would sober up, I think, which wasn't for long, like that was part of my mission statement, I think, at that point in my life, I started realizing, maybe I was around like 17 or 18 at this point, that I would just sober up to a shitter world each time, just a worse version of the reality that I left. And I was blocking this out for the most part, but at some point I realized that I couldn't really block it out. And long story short, my best attempt at getting sober, I would have been freshly 19, and I decided that I just had to get out of the environment where I could even access drugs. And my first instinct was to go to my grandparents' house because they lived in New Zealand. And they lived in a small town called Whangarei, which is where my whole family's from. They've been there forever. And I go into my grandpa's room and without drugs, I start having all of these withdrawal symptoms. And I didn't even have a plan to journal at this point, but nature sort of took over. And with all these withdrawal symptoms, sort of like, I don't know if you've ever had an amphetamine addiction, but they're pretty hectic. And I start having this massive panic attack just on the floor in his room. He was 1 year past at this point, so he wasn't there. And I was looking around the room trying to figure out what could stop it. And I think I had used drugs for so long to be the thing that could stop it, but now I just couldn't access them. So all I could really see was his computer. So I went onto that and he didn't have access to the internet. All he had was Microsoft Word. And I'm like, man, desperate times call for desperate measures. So I open up Microsoft Word and I just started typing and holy smokes, Brett, the words just flowed from my brain out of my fingers. It felt like a massive pressure valve had just been released and I just got all of this crazy head noise that I think I was dealing with onto the page in front of me. And once it was there, it was indexed and I'm like, oh my God, I can see it. I'm not in the grips of it. And I mean, I think I wrote in the book that that lasted for about 2 days before I realized it was going to be an ongoing practice. But that little euphoric moment, that changed me, man. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And so in your book, it's called Your Head is a Houseboat. You're all about showing people, guiding people through what's worked for you to gain mental clarity. Like I think that's why you journal, is to find that mental clarity. Why use the houseboat as a metaphor for the mind?
Yeah. Well, firstly, like the concept of metaphor, I've always lent towards, and particularly when it comes to issues of the mind. And I think that's just because when you're trying to describe something cerebral or something that can't really be explained in tangible terms, because I've never seen the brain, like I've never seen the inside of my brain, it's a lot easier to understand it in terms that we do know, like a house or a park or a street or something like that. And I really did gravitate towards this idea of a house because it's got different compartments, you know, different parts of the brain for different reasons, different parts of your house for different reasons. However, the house kind of fell short when I was really thinking about the metaphor. And it fell short for two reasons. So the first one was a house doesn't really go anywhere, whereas your brain does. And the stakes aren't quite high enough with a house. So the houseboat for me was like the logical choice because the stakes of life are, yeah, man, like you can sink. And I guess that's the stakes of a houseboat as well. Granted, probably about like 1% of people have been on a houseboat and I'm not in that 1%, but I figure it's not too much of a stretch to imagine.
Yeah, I like how you describe like the water that the houseboat is on is sort of his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, our houseboat starts off on a river. Right. And it's sort of like, there's direction, right? The river's got a course you have to follow. And you kind of liken that to childhood. You're born and here's this thing you're supposed to do. You're born, you go to school, you go to college, and then you get to adulthood and then it kind of opens out into the ocean. And that's when things get tricky.
Massively. And I think we've all been there. Like when you just hit that delta and you're like, oh, I don't really know what to do. Right. And even if your childhood was tumultuous, there's still a level of prescription to it because as kids, like even if things are wild, the tendency to question or that bestowed independence, it's not there as much as it is when you are staring at the world as an adult.
And what is it about journaling that can help us keep our houseboats in tip-top shape or in help us get to where we want to be in life?
Yeah, man. Brilliant question again. So I think what I liken it to is, have you ever been like shopping at the groceries? But what you'll do is like, you'll think that you only want a few things. I want limes, I want hummus, I want soy crisps. So you go in there, you don't get a basket, you pick up the limes, you pick up the hummus, you pick up the soy crisps. But on the way, you're like, oh, actually, I needed milk. Oh, actually, I needed cereal. Oh, actually, I needed mangoes. So all of a sudden, now you're holding all of these groceries and you're like, dude, I should have just bought a freaking shopping basket in with me. This whole thing would have been easier. So for me, journaling is like that shopping basket. And I guess I'm mixing my metaphors here, but it's going somewhere, I promise. And I think all of the thoughts that we sort of like collect are like the things that we are going around the shops with. So for me, it's not the ultimate problem solving tool in the world or in our heads, but I guess like the preliminary problem solving tool that shows us what the problems are that we need to solve.
I've noticed that like whenever you get stuff on paper, like when it's in your head, it's all amorphous and it just kind of consumes you. And then like you said, you had that experience when you were going through your withdrawals, you put all those thoughts on a screen and it makes it concrete and you're able to see, it's like, well, actually that's not that, I mean, some of those issues are big, but it's not as big as my brain is fooling me to think it is.
Massively. And that's it. And it's almost like a cavernous echo effect that it has when it is in your head. And then once it's on the page, it kind of looks a bit like dormant or benign. And you're like, well, hello, little thought. I can see you there.
Well, let's talk about some specific journaling practices that have changed your life. Because you've developed other ones after you did the initial just like her brain dump that sort of put you on this path. Then you started figuring out other ways, other practices or techniques you can use. But before we talk about those, I want to talk more about this brain dump you did when you were at your grandparents' house, because this is a practice you've continued to use since then, and this is a practice that anyone can use.
It's really easy to do. You make the case, this is how we can declutter our minds and our, you know, slash houseboat and free up some brain space. So tell us more about, you know, what this journaling practice looks like.
Basically, no inhibitions, just type every single thought or write every single thought. Or if you aren't able to type or write, use voice, like a voice recording app, but just get everything out of your head and flush it onto somewhere else. There is no structure intentionally. And I guess the idea is it doesn't matter how small or insignificant the thought seems, just get it out and try chase your thoughts out and get them onto the page. So even if your thought is something like, man, I really doubt that that Australian guy knows what he's talking about, or like, man, this whole journaling thing, is it really what it's cracked up to be? I am not feeling the full effects of this. Where's my euphoria? Get that out. You know what I mean? And then once you do, it opens up the next layer. And that next layer might be, oh, I was meant to buy so-and-so a birthday present. Oh, it's nearly the end of the year and I haven't even thought about what I'm doing for Christmas. Oh, it's going to be 2023 and how am I going to make my life different? And oh my God, I didn't even do all those New Year's resolutions. Oh God, I'm such a failure. Oh, is it my dad's fault? You know what I mean? You just kind of like peel back the layers and it all just comes out and there it is. Granted, it's unstructured, but that's where the techniques come in, right?
Yeah, and it puts like a lot of less, like, there's like no pressure, right? Sometimes I think people, when they start journaling, they put this pressure, well, it's got to sound good because they read journals from like their great-great-grandparent where it sounds like very sophisticated and blah, and it's like, no, it doesn't need to be like that. Just go stream of conscious. That's all you got to do.
That's a brilliant insight, man. Because yeah, I think there's also like, I think some people might read sort of, oh, I need to, like, they want like a goal, like, oh, should I get one page or two page or half a page? And honestly, anything above a single word is a win. If that's all you have, if all you have time for is like that 1 minute window where you are waiting for the bus and you use your notes app, that's a win.
And then what this brain dump does, it allows you, you can like we said, you can see everything in your head, the things that have been consuming you. And then you can start, it's like decluttering your garage, right? You can start organizing things. You can go through and like, well, do I need this thing? No, I can chunk that. Or I like this thing. Let's take that and we're going to organize it a little better. You know, put this over here. You can start doing that with that brain dump.
That's it, man. Yeah. Just looking at the thoughts unemotionally outside your head as if they are objects in your garage. Beautiful.
Okay. So the first technique, just a brain dump. No pressure, no stakes, just every little thought. Big thoughts could be like, you know, is that lump in my arm? Is that cancer? Or it could be like little just dumb stuff. Oh, I need to pay that library fine or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, just whatever's in your head.
Completely. And more often than not, I find that they run on into each other, those two sentences. And I don't know, there's almost like a comedy to it where you're just like, yep, I do need to, you know, fill up my car. Yes, I should apologize to my cousin for that thing that happened when we were eight, you know?
No, it is funny, like when I've done these brain dumps before, and it is funny to see like, you know, there's like this really big thing followed by this rinky-dink thing. And it's just like, oh my gosh,
I can't believe it. Every time. When did you start doing brain dumps and journaling?
So I don't journal regularly. I used to be a regular journaler.
I hear you.
But then, you know, I just stopped getting anything out of it. I kind of got burnt out, I think, from it.
I can relate, man. Yeah.
But yeah, like I do the brain dump still every now and then when I'm just feeling overwhelmed and I just get a piece of paper or I have a nice journal and I just write just stream of conscious stuff. And it feels good when you do it.
How can I ask how often you might do something like that?
I don't. It's interesting. So it's
is it more situational?
It's more situational. So I used to be really regular about it, like when I was in high school and in my 20s. But then as I got into my 30s, I noticed that I just didn't have the need for it anymore. And
I get that.
One of the reasons why I've found haven't had the desire or need to journal as much compared to when I was younger. When you're young, you got all these big questions in your life, right? Like, where should I go to school? Should I like this girl a lot. Should I take it? You know, should we get married? What should I do with my career? And then as you make decisions on those things, and then you move into your 30s and your 40s, think like, you know, there's not too many big issues, questions that you have to tackle anymore, if that makes sense.
Oh, completely. It's that difference between the radical changing and like a maintenance phase of life. I also think that there's a flow-on effect of having journaled when you're younger. Sort of, it does start to shape your mindset into a more, your thoughts aren't necessarily facts kind of mindset. And I think that's one of the side effects that comes from journaling. And if you're starting, if you've achieved that or achieved like a proxy of that by the time that you're in your 30s, it's a lot easier to access that and sort of emotionally detach yourself from a thought which, yeah, might not be as based in reality, but might have plagued you a bit when you were younger.
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason I stopped journaling too. Because whenever I would journal, I would sometimes find myself doing just sort of the kvetching, just be like, well, here's all my problems, blah, 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 blah. And then I started going, yeah. I started reading through my entries. It's just all the same. It's just me complaining about the same stuff
over and over again.
Dude. It's like, is this useful? And that's why I like, it was great to find your videos. Because you offered other things you can do besides the, because I think what happens when you do the brain dump thing, it can be really useful. But then if that, you just stick with that, I think you get in a mental rut where you just keep on like, well, here are the things I just keep want to complain about. And it doesn't get any better. And I actually think it just makes things worse.
Totally. And the worst is when either A, you read something from when you were younger and you were just completely put off yourself, which I guess is a sign of growth, but it's still like cringy. Or B, you read a problem when you were younger and you still like 10 years later haven't solved it.
Right.
And you're like, ah, here we are again, brother.
Okay. So we talked about the brain dump. Another practice. So if someone wants to move on to something else, right? They're
yes.
getting tired yep. of that. Another practice is journaling to break your mindset. And maybe this can be useful for that, getting into that rut of just complaining about stuff. So what kind of mindset would we want to disrupt and how do you journal to accomplish that?
I would say where my head immediately goes is to the sort of poster boy of demonized mindset, the fixed mindset, which is a nice name for the mindset that you get in when you don't really believe that you can change or that you're capable of things that are beyond your current level of skill or talent or ability. And this is horrible because obviously this keeps us at the same place. And it also reinforces the idea that you can't change. So for me, breaking this is obviously vital, but it becomes incredibly difficult because it's the type of mindset that says it's unbreakable when you are thinking in that mind frame, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and I've thought a long time about ways to break it and I've tried a couple of things, but what I find is really good for something that's more mindset based isn't necessarily like a one-off hit. It's not like the, you know, trash can delete effect of a brain dump that sort of like gives you that immediate pressure valve relief, but it's more like a consistent practice. So because statements might be really good. So let's say you don't believe, what's a classic limiting belief? Like you don't believe that you will ever be the fit athletic Adonis that your childhood self wished that you would be. You're never going to have that six pack because six packs aren't for people who are you, right? Like I think a lot of us who aren't Adonises, you know, we might have a thought like that. The because statement basically takes that and it questions that belief. So, and it sounds so corny when you do it. So just, you know, you don't have to broadcast this to the world. You just kind of got to do it like subtly in your notes app away from the judging eyes of the public who might think you're cringe for self-improving. Maybe that's an Australian thing, who knows. But you would start a sentence with, I will have, call it that athlete's body that I like that I really want because. And then every morning you might finish that sentence with 5 dot points. Then the next day you finish it with 5 dot points more. Next day you finish it with 5 more dot points. And these might be things like, because I understand that eating healthy is something that I really do enjoy every time I do it. Or it might be because I regularly go to the gym, or it might be because I am researching how to actually do this. You know what I mean? And even if it's just one answer to that because statement a day, by the end of a year, you've got 365 reasons why you are actively breaking that limiting belief. And reminding yourself that every day, like it seems so trivial and nominal, but I think it's incredibly powerful to do it over a consistent period of time.
I think you're right. And this comes straight out of cognitive behavioral therapy. This is an idea. Mm-hmm, if you went to a therapist because you're like, I just feel like I'm not getting anywhere in life because I'm a dum-dum, whatever.
Yes.
They would say, the therapist would be like, well, what's your proof for that? Maybe we can question that assumption. And that's what you're doing with this prompt.
Massively, massively. And that's another brilliant way in is, find the proof. Because, I mean, so many of these things, they exist in the emotional realm of our heads and not in the rational. And I mean, the rational, the cynic in us is really quite good at dissecting things when it doesn't benefit us. But when it does benefit us, it can switch off a little, which is why sometimes it's nice to have that logic in front of you, objective on paper.
And as you said, you might feel awkward doing this. You're like, what? This is so cheesy. Like, I'm challenging my thoughts. But the alternative is you're just going to let your brain reinforce the negative mindset you have. So why not do something different?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, because otherwise it's what? Complacency taking over. And I mean, play that out over a lifetime. Like, that doesn't sound too pleasant. So the little bit of pain where you have to access your inner Tony Robbins energy is probably going to be worth it in the long shot.
So that practice is take a look at limiting belief or mindset you have and then challenge it and show like the proof, like, hey, here's why I'm not doing that. Here's what I'm doing to counter that, and do that consistently. And I imagine like reviewing that stuff just reinforces that.
Oh, completely. I mean, that's a whole other kettle of fish, because I mean, this is, if we're going into a sort of more, what would you call it, like a tough love version of this exercise, this is a really cool one. So basically what you do is you paint two versions of yourself. So we've got Brett, who is, so what is actually, yeah, we'll do this right now, lifetime. So what's the worst version of you that you could become? Like, just left to your own devices, hedonism takes over massively. What do you look like?
Let's see, just constantly surfing the internet, not exercising, and just being a jerk to my family.
Love it. All right. So we'll call it a chronically online unfit jerk. All right. And what's the best you that you can become?
Spending just rarely any time online, just enough to do my work. I'm exercising regularly and I'm just on it with my family. I'm just like number one dad.
Cool, man. Yeah. Sweet as. So yeah, successful, inspiring family man. So you would have these two archetypes, and one is designed, the words are chosen specifically to bully you, and the other one, the words are chosen specifically to inspire you. And then with each thing that you do in a day, you basically add, like you would say, oh, okay, today, what did I have for breakfast? It was this. What did I do after that? Oh, I scrolled social media. What did I do after that? I actually did my work. And each of these things basically places a vote in either the chronically online jerk or in the inspiring Brett who loves his family. And then by the end, you tally the votes, and whichever one has more is theoretically the goalpost that you are moving towards. So that's more of like a review-based one. And what I like about that is I know some of us do really respond quite well to that tough love, myself included. So if you want to up the ante, that might be one to try.
I like that. And you call this a lifestyle and habits audit. And just to kind of do a recap for people, what you do is you take a journal page and then you break it down into three columns. And then in the first column, you put actions as the heading. And then the second, you put the worst version of yourself. And then in the third column, you put the best version of yourself as the heading. And then in the first column, you list all the things you did that day. And then you put a check mark for that action in either the negative or positive column. And what you can do is you can see which column has more marks in it. And what this can do, it sounds like, is can give you a sense, just as a glance at the page, of which direction your life is moving, you know, whether it's moving towards or away from the person you want to be. So that's the lifestyle audit part of it. And then it can help you think about what habits and environments are reinforcing either the good or bad lifestyle decision, you know, like what's helping you or what's hindering you. We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's INDOCHINO.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today.
Have you always struggled with finding time to manage your finances? At the end of a busy week, the last thing you want to do is spend time budgeting all of your expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions you no longer use. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. My favorite feature on Rocket Money is finding those unwanted subscriptions. If you're like me, you have a bunch of those things you signed up for but forgot about, streaming services, newsletters, maybe some fitness plans. You just connect your account to the app, Rocket Money finds the recurring subscription fees, and then you can easily cancel them from the app. It's a really cool, cool service. They also have a service that can help you lower your bill. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That's a lot of money. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. There have been a lot of amazing people as guests on this podcast, but what if you want to go deeper? If you're looking somewhere to learn from the most remarkable people, that's Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, and they have over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. For example, Chris Voss has a class on negotiation, Jocko Willink has a class on leadership, and Malcolm Gladwell has a class on writing. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. One class that I've really enjoyed is the one with Chris Voss on negotiation. My favorite lesson in that class was the lesson on tactical empathy, something we talked about in the podcast that we did with him a long time ago, but he goes in deeper with this. And besides just the lectures, you get exercises so you can actually put this stuff into practice. Right now, listeners will get an additional 15% off annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM. And now back to the show. So another journaling practice you recommend is journaling as a daily reflection. And you recommend asking yourself 5 questions each day as you look back on your day. Those questions are: what excited me? What drained me of energy? What did I learn? What am I grateful for? And how did I push the needle forward? And you say your 3 favorites of these 5 questions are: what am I grateful for? What drained me of energy? And what did I learn? Why is it helpful to journal about those questions?
Those 3 particular questions, I think, are really cool because it's like they don't exactly show you anything new in terms of information, but they do articulate your intuition. And worse still, they articulate that intuition over a time period where it is so painfully obvious to see what you had a suspicion about just reflect back at you. So I'll give you an example. So what are you grateful for today? Spending time with your family. What drained you of energy, if it's you? And that picture that you painted before, it might be, oh man, I just fell down a scroll hole and all of a sudden I'm learning about something that just is not useful to me. All of a sudden I'm reading the most toxic comment section and just enjoying it, right? That drained you of energy. What did you learn? I should spend more time with my family and less time online. Now, you already know this, but seeing it in writing, it's painful, man. Seeing it in writing over 30 days, you can't look at that and not actively act on that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, what's something you personally discovered through this practice?
Oh, So much. Definitely. So I mentioned at the start of this interview that sort of feeling of withdrawal and obviously like teenage drug addict, blah, 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 sob story. But when I did go back home after what I thought was going to be my one and only attempt at sobriety, I fell straight back into patterns. And it wouldn't take me, you know, it would be another 9 years of shitty habits before I could actually finally kick those drugs and finally kick the alcohol. So I think journaling massively helped me realize that I was justifying using drugs and alcohol in the most insidious ways. Once I had quit something, for example, like once I quit either like meth or cocaine, I would still find myself drinking, but justifying it to myself by saying, oh, but this is a socially acceptable alcohol. But then when I still wrote what drained me of energy today, I'm like, well, it was probably the 3 drinks I had at night or the 10 drinks I had on the weekend. And I was like, oh man, I don't think I've gotten sober at all. I think I just traded addictions for one that people don't hate. So yeah, sobriety would be probably the biggest benefit that I got from that.
And again, seeing that stuff on paper, it just makes it objective, right? You can't hide from it anymore.
You really can't. And I think that's, I mean, journaling is not going to solve the problems, but it's going to really show you what the problems are. It's going to be just incredibly well-defined.
Is there a journaling practice you recommend for when you're having trouble making a decision?
Yeah. So this is one, I haven't actually talked about this on the channel yet because I'm using it at the moment. I want to see if it works. And between you and me, Brett, it is definitely working. And the reason that I started using it is mostly because I think it really applies to like big life decisions. I've been thinking a bit about sort of like moving cities, that type of thing. And what I realized that I do, and then after Googling, I realized humans do it, is when we look at the future, we tend to not be able to predict it that accurately. Like there, so if you've got like an optimistic bias, you might look at what the future will be and you'll look at through rose-tinted glasses. If you've got a pessimistic bias kicking in that day, then you might see the opposite, right? So when I am at the precipice of these big decisions, I'll use the example of moving cities. The thing that I have done to try offset those biases, and I know that's an impossible task, but I'm doing my best, is instead of just comparing what I think the good and the bad is comparing the worst possible day that I would have in city A with the worst possible day I'd have in city B, then a mundane day versus a mundane day, then a good day versus a good day. And I find that this is like a really nice way of overcoming, I don't know, any romanticism that I might have about where I go, because that's only just going to set me up to have those expectations broken. Instead, I'm actually comparing the reality of it, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And you have a section in Your Head as a Houseboat. We got what's the whack, it's called the wacky windshield, right? And those are all of those biases. And then that technique that you're using is trying to help you just kind of wash the biases from your windshield you look out through.
Yeah, and trying's the key word. I think, I don't know if anybody in history has ever been able to truly see anything objectively, but I mean, it's a noble goal to try, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Another journaling practice you recommend for decision-making that I really liked was you set a timer for 60 seconds, and then during that time, you write down what your decision would be if you just had that minute to decide. And I like this because it forces you to recognize the answer. You know, you probably already know it and you just haven't been able to admit it or accept it yet. Let's say someone struggles with anxiety. Is there a journaling practice that you like to use to quiet that anxiety?
Yeah, there is. So me and anxiety, we go way back. And what I've found is that, so we all know about the idea of catastrophizing when you start thinking of a particular consequence and then that consequence spirals out of control. Like, oh man, can I tell a story of that was stupidest catastrophizing?
Yeah, I love it because I do that all. I do it. I'm a master catastrophizer.
Okay, so I would have been quite young. Now it's sort of like you know how Americans might go to like Cancun or wider Mexico as like a bit of a rite of passage at some point in their life.
Right.
So for Australians, it's Southeast Asia. And I was doing my obligatory 19-year-old trip to Thailand and I was on a train and this guy sits down next to me, this train guard, and first red flag, he goes, "Hi, my name's Cop." And I'm like, g'day, cop, how you going? And I didn't think anything of it. I'm just like, yeah, that's just his name. And he's like, do you like music? And I'm like, yes, I do. He's like, do you like weed? And I'm like, yes, I do. And he's like, how about when the train starts, you and me smoke weed? And I'm like, cop, you genius. That sounds like the greatest thing that we could do right now. Anyway, the train starts. It's one of those sort of overnight trains. Cop comes and gets me. We go into his guard compartment and he pulls out this little homemade bong and we both take some hits. And I'm like, all right, me and cop, we're now getting stoned on the train. This is cool. Anyway, go and sit back down. And before I go sit back down, sorry, cop's like, hey, did you light the weed? And I'm like, yeah, I did, dude. And he's like, why don't you buy some? And I'm like, immediately I start thinking, oh, if I do that, because you hear all these stories about tourists who get the weed planted on them and then all of the police guards will come and basically arrest you unless you pay some sort of bribe, right? So I am freaking out at this point. And I'm like, nah, man, I'm actually, I don't have any money. I'm so sorry. And so I go and sit back down. Here is where catastrophizing actually helped. And this is, I think, why anxiety sticks with a lot of people, because I see cop go and pull the same stunt on another dude, another young dude who's like roughly my age, like visually Australian. You can just tell. He goes in, he's clearly bought weed, because the next stop, 30 train guards come on and take this kid off. And I think because of that, because the catastrophizing actually helped me in that one moment, it can be really, really hard to part with. And I think that's like the first thing to remember when you are thinking about some of these like negative things in your head, is a lot of them have come up as a means of protecting yourself. So I would say like the first journaling technique for something like anxiety or like fear is to understand how it's there to protect you. And then the second one I would say is, when it comes to catastrophizing, try pull it into the reality. Because when things are in your head, so like that's a one-off situation. 99 times out of 100, when I'm thinking, oh, I really want to go for a swim, but there was a shark attack here like 40 years ago, and what if I get eaten by a shark? 99 times out of 100, that catastrophizing has no basis in reality. So a good journaling technique for that would be just to pull it into terms of reality. And one that I really like is, what would I bet money on? So if you're thinking like, I don't want to drive my car because I'm worried that a semi-trailer will crash into me, I think we've all had a thought like that, then the option that you would bet money on, if some sort of like devil bookie came down and took all of your money out of your bank account and said, hey, which one? You would probably be more inclined, now that it's in a reality terms, to bet on the less catastrophized scenario, if that makes sense. So to sum up, firstly, understand that some of these anxieties are there to protect you. And sometimes there are situations where overthinking things has a benefit. And that might be why they're sticking around in you. But also recognize that most of the time, it's just a hang up from our old brains, and that a lot of the things that we fear probably aren't going to happen.
I love that, like, do the journaling where like you bet money, right? Like if, hypothetically, like how much would I bet? It reminds me of, heard of Annie Duke. She used to be a professional poker player and she's written a lot of books about decision making.
Yeah.
And she has this, in one of her books, she talks about if you've got an opinion, or you got someone who's got this opinion that it's kind of dumb and they're being really stubborn about it, ask them, how much would you bet that you're right? And like actually put a number, and actually maybe give a number, like, are you 70% sure, 80% sure, and put money to it. And it causes, immediately when you do that, it causes you and maybe the other person to, you start hedging your bets a little bit. You're like, well, if you put it that way, maybe not. So I like that idea. It's like, if I'm having catastrophizing, like, okay, if I were to say I had to bet $1,000 that this would come true, would I make that bet? And probably the answer would be no.
I think to extend on that as well, like when you're talking percentages, like is to rule out 70% as well. Yeah, rule out 7 out of 10, because then you'll find that you'll naturally either go 6 or 8.
Yeah.
And there's your answer.
Okay. So we've talked about different techniques. We got the brain dump, which is a really easy one. You could do the journaling to break your mindset. So it's just challenging assumptions you have. You can do the journaling as a daily reflection. Ask those questions. What are you grateful for? What's draining you of energy? What did you learn today? We talked about the lifestyle audit. We talked about using journaling to kind of help with anxiety, and then also journaling to make a decision. How do you know what sort of journaling you should do on a particular day?
Oh, that's a brilliant question. So I guess it's about how you're feeling, right? And I mean, not every problem can be solved by journaling. Like, there's no real point understanding what's going on in your head if you haven't slept for 48 hours. There's definitely a better solution for you. But if all your physiological needs are met, what I would do is more or less start out with a brain dump or something to figure out what the problem is that you are trying to solve on any given day. Because until you know the problem, you don't really know what direction you need to run in. So there's no point running full steam. And yeah, so I guess I'd say like establish what the problem is and then go from there.
Okay. And so it could change. I think it's great to have different options because I like I said, we were talking about earlier with me, I think my problem was I just used the brain dump technique. Okay. So just kind of based on what you, so start off with a brain dump. That's a great way to get started. And then from there, kind of just figure what you need and then pick a technique based on that. A lot of people get hung up on this question is how do you recommend people do their journaling? Paper and pen, computer, smartphone. What's your take on that?
Yes to everything.
Okay, yeah.
I think, some people like the romance of the Moleskine journal and the beautiful fountain pen. Some people really cherish the anti-romance of like a biro and a $1 like spiral ring notebook. I personally think any way that it's not in your head and then it's out is the good technique, whatever you have at your disposal at that time. And it doesn't even need to be written. Like, you could use the voice recording app on your phone. If they're just questions that you want to talk about, you could just get a trusted friend and literally have the conversation with them. If it's a podcast that you're not going to publish because it's too intimate, do that. Like, whatever it is that helps you structure your thoughts so that they're not tormenting you is the right technique. And it might change day to day. There doesn't need to be consistency. You don't have to show anybody. So yeah, whatever. There's arguments for a lot of stuff. The argument for handwriting that you hear a lot of the time is that the speed of handwriting and the fact that you are moving helps you synthesize your thoughts a bit more. And the fact that your thoughts go a little bit faster than your handwriting and that handwriting's slower than typing means that the synthesis of your thoughts leads to a clearer thought on the page. The argument for typing would be the speed of it and that you can sort of keep up with your thoughts a little bit better. Argument for voice recording is, I mean, it's probably the least effort. So honestly, whatever you have, whatever feels good, whatever the path of least resistance is, that's the right technique.
Okay. So yeah, don't worry about it. You don't have to do like Google searches or watch Instagram videos of people talking about their paper journal.
Yeah, bullet journaling, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I'd say if you're getting hung up on that, just type.
Yeah, just type. So this is a really cool video you did about an experiment you did for a year where you replace social media with what you call micro journaling. So what was going on in your life that prompted the experiment of giving up social media for micro journaling?
Yeah. So, you know how I sheepishly told you that I had quit drugs to use and then just kept going with alcohol. So when I quit alcohol, I kept going with social media. So I think it was just addiction trading before I really started figuring out what was kind of going wrong in my head. And when I was like, well, shoot, now I am using my phone way too freaking much. I've got to do something about this. So there's like probably, I guess, like three ways that people might look at phone addiction or social media addiction. You might think, okay, I'll use willpower or I'll use environment, like get a lockbox, or I will use the energy of the habit and try to turn it into something good. So I figured I'd try all three. And then in terms of taking the trigger of my phone, so in terms of using that third thing, what I decided to do was basically, you know how you got the muscle memory, you unlock your phone and then immediately you go to press YouTube or immediately go to press TikTok or whatever. Basically, where my thumb would naturally go, I decided to take the social media apps out and put in my notes app, which sounds super trivial, but what you find is you actually met with like a little bit of embarrassment the first time it happens. And that's kind of a good feeling. So you unlock your phone, you mindlessly go to press on, call it Instagram, but instead your notes app opens up. And when that happened to me, I was like, oh, I'm pathetic. Because I could feel my brain being like, gimme, gimme dopamine. Where is my validation? I want my brain to go brr when I see the red number. But instead, I'm now looking at this notes app and I'm like, well, I'm here. Might as well write that embarrassing, shameful thought. So I did that and I was like, that didn't feel so bad. So that's where the experiment started. It was me trying to replace my muscle memory in order to help with that habit, and the Notes app felt like the most benign app I could use. And after doing that, I was like, well, let's just keep going. So I went for a week and I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. And then I went for another week. And after a while, I realized it had been a year, which is when I made that video. And oh man, it was crazy. So some of the things that happened when I found that I had basically traded out those little 30-second social media breaks for a sentence or two in my Notes app. So firstly, yes, all the obvious stuff happened. Used social media less, felt a bit more mentally clear, felt a bit happier, compared myself less to people. But then there were all these other cool side effects that I didn't really see coming. Like I started using my phone a bit differently. I started thinking about my relationship to my phone. My memory got better as well. Like I was able to recall things from way further back in my timeline because I was like, well, I wrote about them, so they're there. So yeah, I would recommend that to most people. Sadly, after my daughter was born, I stopped doing it, but I've picked it back up recently.
And so when you opened up the app, what did you write about? Was it just like I'm feeling dumb doing like, and besides that, what other stuff did you write about?
Yeah, heaps of stuff, man. Like they were never all too pretty and they would vary few and far between. So some would be like, just woken up, feeling good, had a coffee, life is great. Like some would be like the most simple stuff. And then other times would be like, I had the worst day, head is crying, like not even well written. Other times it would be like a to-do list in the form of kind of like emotional prose. Other times it would be a recount of what happened in that day. Other times it would be whatever's frustrating me, whatever I don't want to do. It was honestly stream of consciousness and it was just capturing those tiny thoughts. There was no rules. I mean, I can read them out if you want, but they were they ranged from completely benign thoughts about, oh, I need to go to Bunnings to fix my shelf, to like intense thoughts about, I don't know, childhood trauma. So it was everything and everything. The only rule was that it happened in my Notes app and that it never really exceeded the 5-minute mark.
And just to be clear, you didn't get rid of your social media app because you're an online content creator.
Correct.
So you just shifted the location of the apps on your phone so that, you know, the usual place where Instagram is at, you put the Notes app there, for example. How did you overcome the tendencies? Like, well, your brain sort of figures out, well, I typed in my thing and I can go over to this app and like, I can enjoy myself. Like, how did you minimize that?
Yeah, a couple of ways. So coming back to that idea of like, so either using the addiction, using your environment or using willpower. So willpower was good, but a lot of addiction experiences told me it's just not that great. So environment was the next one. So if I did feel that, I would either use like a lockout app, like one of those lockout timers, or I would quite literally delete the app. So that would happen as well if it was ever just getting too much. Yeah, so mostly just trying to use my digital environment to literally ban myself because I know I'm like I'm not passing the marshmallow test, brother. Oh God, no.
Okay, so I like that. And I've actually, after I watched that video about microjournaling, I started doing it. It's really cool.
No way.
No,
sick,
yeah.
Man.
No,
yeah,
it's really great. And like what I think it's genius because I think most people, like the smartphone is just basically an adult pacifier. Like when I bust out my phone, it's just because I'm bored. It's like a, what is this, fidget popper thingies that, I just kind of like by muscle memory, like I'll open up and I'll just like, I go through this loop of stuff. And then I look, it's like, that was dumb. And so I like the idea.
That's my favorite analysis of social media ever.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
And so I like the idea of I'm going to do something else. It's on my phone. I'm going to get the tactile satisfaction of doing bubble pop on my phone, you know, tapping things out, but it's a little bit more productive.
Totally. That was, yeah, the philosophy that drove it 100%. I'm thrilled to hear you did it.
No, it's cool. Yeah. So what I do is I just, I got the iPhone and so I've got the Notes app. And so like every day I just start a new note and I put the date at the top. I guess that's what you did.
And I still do that. I still do that every day. Yeah.
And then from there on, anytime I bust out my phone, I have that itch to be like, I'm going to go, you know, check out what's going on here. Or like, I'm like, I got to Google that. Instead of doing that, I'll just open up my Notes app. It's like, well, I had this itch to Google this thing and I don't really need to do that. And the reason why I was Googling it, cause I was, you know, wondering about blah, blah, blah. And I guess I don't need, and it's been so far, I'm enjoying it. It's been useful.
Nice. Can I ask how long you've been doing the habit?
So it's like just a week. I'm just a week in. So I started I watched it and I started, you know, prepping for this thing. I was like, I like that idea.
Awesome, man.
So we'll see how it goes. We'll see if it continues strong.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear.
So you mentioned you're a new dad, and becoming a new dad threw off the micro journaling, but you're getting back into it.
Has
having a baby thrown a wrench into other journaling practices, or have you found ways to keep it going?
It threw a wrench for sure. Like, most definitely. No two ways about it. So first kid, which meant it's the wrench that completely changes your lifestyle. And I mean, completely changes hers as well, because she starts one. And definitely those first 2 months, I think any plans of self-improvement or any plans of introspection were put on hold or put on the back burner for keep the blob alive, which became the new goal. But I guess as me and my wife have gotten into the rhythm of parenthood and into the rhythm of the, you know, the life we want to create for her, we've sort of started incorporating back some of those old practices and, like, obviously new practices as well, because you know your whole entire life changes. So it only goes to stand that something that might not have worked for you back then would still work for you now. Who knows? But in terms of when I did start incorporating it back, it was firstly in the form of a brain dump. But what I found that I was gravitating more towards was really action-oriented journaling. So I found basically, like, with less time, with more responsibilities, with all of that sort of stuff, I always had the idea that the journaling had to lead to actions at the end. And I found that at the end, like, basically, if it was a brain dump, if it was questions, if it was prompts, if it was micro journaling, there was always, what are the next three things that I have to do that would come out of it? And I guess that for me felt like a justification of, like, the time that I'd spent journaling and not time that I'd spent doing something else. And B, it, I don't know, calmed me down in a way that improved other people around me.
Yeah, so no more angsty teenage 20-something.
Yeah, massively, dude. Yeah, that's it. And, like, even sometimes, like, I'll go back and read, like, the stupid things that I wrote when I was 20. And holy hell, that guy had no idea, man. But maybe I'll think that about this time now, and I'll look back and be like, that guy had no idea.
You know? I like that idea as you shift into, you know, adulthood, making your journaling more action oriented instead of sort of the belly staring that you tend to do when you're younger. I like that.
Completely. Yeah.
But I think it's worth finding to hold on to a little deeper introspection into your adulthood as well. You know, trying to think about those big questions too. So a lot of people love the idea of journaling, right? I think it's this thing. It's like, oh man, it just seems so cool. And they start it, but they find they can't stick with it consistently. Do you have any advice on how to make it a regular part of one's daily routine and then stay with it?
Yeah. So two things if you are struggling with consistency in it. Firstly, lower the barrier to entry. So if right now you feel like journaling has to be pomp and circumstance where you open some sort of notebook and light a candle, it really doesn't have to be. If you're thinking, oh, journaling is only when I write three pages, it totally doesn't have to be. I think that's why a lot of people resonated with the micro journaling video, because they're like, oh, it only has to be a sentence. So lower the barrier to entry, I'd say, is the first one. And then the second one is try attach it to something that you already do that is in, I guess, like a similar context. So if you do write out a to-do list every day, which a lot of people do, add a little bit of journaling on the front. Doesn't have to be much. Put on a timer for like 5 minutes, just get a few thoughts down, then write the to-do list, or other way around, if whatever works for you. So yeah, lower the barrier and stack it with something you already do.
Well, Cam, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the book and your work?
Yeah, Your Head is a Houseboat is the book, and Struthless is my YouTube channel. So check that out.
Well, hey, Cam Walker, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Brett. Really appreciated it.
My guest today was Cam Walker. He's the author of the book, Your Head is a Houseboat. It's available on Amazon.com. You can find him on all social media platforms at Struthless. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/journaling, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Make sure to check out our website at artofmanliness.com, where you find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles written over the years about pretty much anything you think of. And if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, sign up, use code manliness at checkout for a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android, iOS, and you start enjoying ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate if you take 1 minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think we get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, it's Brett McKay. Remind you on listening to the podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.